Hello, you're listening to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. If some of our discussions and tips are working for you, why don't you grab a 15-minute call with us at ecommercecall.com. We'll see whether we can help scale your e-commerce business. We will quickly see if we're a fit or whether we can recommend someone else to get you where you need to go. The worst case is you'll have a fun 15-minute chat, and regardless, you'll come away understanding a lot more about your business. Book a call at ecommercecall.com. Hello and welcome to the Hamerty Brothers e-commerce podcast. This week, we're diving into the world of business-to-business e-commerce and how that differs from business-to-consumer websites. It's one of the fastest growing areas of e-commerce, and there's lots you can do to optimize your site. So let's get started. Hi, Ian. How are you doing this morning?
Hi, Mark. I'm okay.
This is good.
How are you?
Good. I'm all right. Yeah. Right. Today, we wanted to dive into business-to-business e-commerce. And the reason for that is not only is business-to-business one of the biggest areas that's growing in e-commerce at the moment, but also a lot of people who have direct-to-consumer stores have the opportunity to also do a wholesale side of the business or a bulk side of the business. So it's slightly different sometimes to suddenly start selling to a more, you know, corporate buyer. And there's slight shifts. And in fact, there's probably more to play for in terms of recruiting the customer, because once you've got the customer, then they tend to shop around less than a consumer-to-consumer, just because of the inherent friction in setting up an account and getting that accepted by the head office as an approved supplier and all those things.
So once you've got them, you tend to get them for life, you know.
Yeah, well, as long as you don't mess up.
And as long as you don't mess up, that's right. You tend to keep them. So they're quite valuable.
Yes.
You know, compared to, I mean, obviously, you know, you tend to find that the lifetime customer value is much greater. It depends on what you're selling, of course, but you know, it does tend to be higher for a B2B type of wholesale.
Because if you
customer.
Can become that preferred site for that thing, if you think of a business-to-business client, they'll have many, many suppliers. And the last thing they want to do is to kind of go and replace all the suppliers at the same time, because they're trying to get something done on their end as well. And therefore, they want to make sure there's a frictionless process of getting the products into their systems without causing any hassle. So
I'll just say that there's quite a few nuances really in it, but in the main, you'll find that certain B2B customers, you might be selling products and they're going to resell it on, and that's slightly different. But obviously that can happen. But also, you might just be selling your normal stuff to businesses like, you know, home furnishings or sofas and cushions, you know, and they're going in and being used in offices.
Mm.
So that's B2B as well.
Yeah. And they can be very lucrative, these, because obviously, you know, if your average order value could be, you know, £70, but then your average order value for a corporate could be in the thousands, couldn't it? So, you know, it's certainly worth going after that market. And so when you're trying to recruit, say you've got a business-to-business site, trying to recruit the customer, most customers turn into what we call the methodical customer. Because if you think about it, you know, when you're an individual buying something for £70, you know, it's there's less of a risk if it goes wrong. The risk is you end up with something and you just return it. Whereas if you're a business-to-business client, you know, quite literally the person buying the thing, their job might be on the line if they get it wrong, or they don't want to look bad, and so therefore they're going to research the purchase a lot more. So they're a methodical buyer. They're going to look at dot the I's and cross the T's and go through everything in a lot more detail. So therefore, what we want to focus on a lot is proof that we can do what we say we can do. So you'll see in a lot of business to business websites, a lot of like, you know, we do the gravel for, the Buckingham Palace, or, you know, like they'll have demonstrations of customers that work with them that are, you know, big and authority customers. So that's how it's done a lot of time, to kind of get the proof across, to say, you know, you can trust us with this business because we are we work with these other people. So that works. And then, of course, you know, FIFO ratings, Trustpilot, and just an overwhelming burden of proof to tell the new customer that they're going to come onto the site and they're going to have a happy experience, because it is all about winning that customer. And if you think about why that customer is searching for a new supplier, it's probably because A, their existing supplier is messed up, or B, that they're moving to a new area of the business that they don't have any confidence with, not bought that before. So so they're kind of doubly, once burnt, doubly shy. You know, they've been burnt once, so they want to make sure that this is going to be a better experience, or they're moving into a new area where they've got no experience of buying that product. So in fact, a lot of the times, B2B, they'll grab the phone still. So you need to have the phone number very big on the website, because they might grab the phone for the first order to check you out and get the experience. And then once they've ordered that first order, then they're quite happy to buy online because they've sussed you out. So, I mean, what would you think, Ian?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And what tends to happen is, you know, some of our B2B clients have an existing pool of customers and they want to start selling online. And the process is actually getting these pool of customers to go from the telephone to actually online in the first place. That can be the goal, actually, because they find the telephones are just being, you know, they're just order takers, and these you know, they've got call centers who are just placing, you know, order after order after order. And they say, well, let's get these on the website, you know, rather than just doing these, you know, ordering the same thing every week. So it can be a massive time saver. And then once you get them buying online, you tend to find that they buy more than they would have done if they were phoning up, because, you know, they can do it at any time they like. You can do it at 10 o'clock on a Sunday night if they want to, you can check the stock. Also, you can do a lot more upselling. Ironically, you know, you can actually control that conversation a bit more, which you think, you know, well, that's the danger if we get them to buy online rather than telephone, you know. But actually, you can bring out, you know, if there's a new product that's come in, you can do replacement products for it. You can even do things like any product that you've bought, it might be a load of spare parts for it. You know, you can actually then automatically build that for them on the website. And of course, you can make it very easy for them to reorder, you know, like one-click reordering. So it tends to be that, you know, it's hard to get them buying online in the first place because you've got to change the habit. You know, you've got to. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying the scenario I'm giving here is that you might have you've got an existing customer base and you're trying to get them to change their behaviour, which can be quite difficult. So you have to incentivise them, but it's worth doing it. Because the share of wallet is bigger once you get them online.
And also, one of the risks or one of the worries that they sometimes have is, like, you know, as a customer, you might say, well, I always deal with Dave. Dave looks after me. And I just ring up Dave because he knows our account, et cetera, et cetera. Whereas what we've done quite recently is that we've said to that customer, so when you log on, the live chat agent will be Dave. So it's going to go through to Dave, so that therefore when you log onto the website and you are browsing and you have a question, that'll go directly to the person you're used to speaking to. So your account manager will. So therefore, they're not losing that connection with the person that helps them out. So they can just go, as they go to the basket, they go, oh, Dave, could you just have a quick look at this, just to make sure this is what we normally get. He has a look at it and it's done. So you're keeping that original relationship with the customer and allowing Dave, who's your amazing call center team member, to be able to handle a lot more business, because now he's not having to talk to them all the way through the system and get all the products online. They can add it to the basket and he's just having a quick check and go, yep, that's fine. Or have you forgotten to get your springs or whatever, and therefore it's adding another layer.
Technology now is really cool because you can actually see what they're looking at. You can see what's in their basket. You can see, you know, you can actually add things in the basket for them. to phone up and go, oh, yeah, no, I've put that in your basket for you. You just need to go and buy it. You know,
yeah, and really also quite, Dave quite clever. could be sent a list of his customers and who've been on the site recently. So if he's got a quiet time, he can go, oh, these are my customers. This is what they've been doing. Oh, one of them's got $3,000 or £3,000 in it in their basket. I'm just going to ring them up and see why they haven't actually clicked the button to say why that's not gone through.
I think the great thing is once you get your B2B customers buying online, you get into a system, you know, where you can start to automate things. You can start to do automated email replenishments. You know, you can start to see which products are that they're buying frequently over and over and over again. And you can start to prompt them and help them with it, saying, hey, you last ordered this consumable, you know, 4 times in the last 12 months. You ordered it 3 months ago. You know, do you need another one? And you could do so much more. Rather than sitting there as an order taker, you can actually be pushing them automatically, prompting them to just to do it. And also you can spot what they're not buying. So they might be buying a particular product from you, but you sell lots of other ones and you want to get them to buy the other products and they're only buying the same thing over the time. So but you can then do offers and you can encourage them to buy into other areas, which is very hard to do.
And also, if you have, you'll have in any sales team, in any call team, there'll be one, you know, let's say you've got 10 salesmen, there'll be one salesperson that absolutely nails it and does probably, you know, 50% more business on average than everybody else. And there'll be certain things that salesperson does that means they sell, they do the right upsells, they have the right communication, they're pushing the right kind of products. And what you can do with your website is you can take what that super salesman does and then make it automated onto the website so that everybody's doing the same thing. So that even though they've still got, you know, maybe they've got Mark as their salesperson, who's not the top salesman like Dave, and therefore, but now Mark is all the things that he should be doing. They're being reminded about those products that they should upsell. They should be reminded about that they should be buying this with this. They're being shown the new product, you know, so that you're taking your top systems and flow and you're putting it across your whole customers. And obviously that's going to increase sales because everybody's just going through the same way. And as soon as you find what else Dave is doing to sell his things, you can go, oh, Dave's now selling this and that's not on the website. So we need to now put that on the website.
I remember about 2 years ago, I got invited to one of our B2B clients and I went into their call center office and they had about 30 different call agents. And they said, go and listen to those two over there. So I sat down and listened to them on the phone. And you know, because they were the top salespeople. And it's obvious what they're saying. You know, they're really pushing in a nice way. They're doing it to help people. Oh, look, actually, when you're doing that job, most people buy this as well. You know, you don't want to take the risk. And also, you probably better get a spare too, because, you know, actually find that, you know, there's an offer on at the moment and, you know, you might as well get it. You know, it's like, it's so easy. It was just effortless for them because they knew the products really well. They knew the job to be done really well. Yeah. And they knew what offers they could. And they just asked these the right questions. And then, of course, you take that and then you put that into, you know, into the website.
Yeah.
And you're trying to replicate that experience.
They'll say, be saying things like, well, actually, it may be more expensive now, but if you're trying to do that job, if you get these two products together, you're actually going to save yourself £2,000 because you won't have to do this thing at the end. And also, you won't have to do this job every 5 years. You'll be able to do it every 10 years because you bought it. You know, they'll know how to sell the products in the right way. And therefore, if you can take that, I mean, that's what, you know, when we go around customers, we'll actually sit with those salesmen and then we'll go, right, well, that's not on the product. You haven't put that on the product page. Why haven't you put that information there? It's clear that's what they need to be told. And then you can also like demonstrate that on the B2B site with videos, before and after images, client testimonials that are going over those key points, like saying, oh, I thought I could just buy this product, but actually if I get this, this, and this, I actually only need to do it once every 10 years. And it's like, boom. And it's hugely motivational for the customer. And one other thing that I think people in B2B do shy away from is they think that the offer architecture isn't necessarily relevant for them. And I think that is, you couldn't be further from the truth in the fact that you've got to remember that you're still selling to people. Like, people are people, and they will have the same triggers, whether they're buying for a business, whether they're buying for their own personal lives. And so what a lot of these big B2B sites have done is that they've actually incentivized the buyer who has the power to buy those things. So if you think about people like Viking, when they're buying, I think Viking sell, is it like stationery and all that kind of stuff?
They were traditional B2B stationery supplier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, this was like 20 years ago.
Just as a quick side note, what that company was very good at was going in with their sort of lost leaders, their ream of paper that they would do, a ream of paper that would be really, really cheap. And then the assumption was that everything was cheap. And then, they'd start signing the other stuff. And obviously the other stuff actually wasn't quite that cheap. But they'd be doing these deals and you just sort of assumed that it would be cheap.
But also they incentivize the actual buyer. So often, like, when an applies approved, it might get sent to an assistant. So listen, you go and buy, you now go and buy. Every time that cupboard empties, you need to go and top up. And this is who you do it with. And this is the account. And so they incentivize that assistant to say, look, if you buy more from us, we will send you a toaster, or we'll send you a kettle, or whatever it is. They would have prizes for the individual that the assistant would want. So therefore they'd go, oh, I'll just go and get a little bit more because I'm authorized to go and spend up to this much for this thing. So I'll actually go and get all that paper today, because then I can go and get my our thing, and then we can have that in our kitchen, you know? So it was a way for them to incentivize the buyer, who wasn't necessarily the overall decision maker in terms of like setting up the account, but became the decision maker from a day-to-day basis. And that was really, I mean, that was huge. The people in these offices, they're always asking, oh, could we get a coffee machine, or can we get this, or could we get some, biscuits for the meeting room, and all that kind of stuff. And like those simple things, they go, well, if I can do that through Viking, I can get that. Everybody be really happy if I get that from the office, you know? And that those little things seems crazy that, that might be like £100,000 order, but it might be motivated by the fact they're going to get a coffee machine, because that's what the buyer really wants. It's not their money they're spending, is it? So it's about working out how to influence the actual person that pushes the button. And they will have, set limits of what they can spend up to. And you might as well let them spend as much as they can. So there's lots of different offer architectures you can use. And also the offers, the offer architecture we talk about, which is the three-legged stool, but the offer inside that, the same thing, reason why there's an offer, not just putting a blanket discount out there, tie it to the story of the company about what's happening, or be in the mind of the consumer, or of the business. What's the business thinking about? What's on their mind? Because if you actually make it more relevant to them, they'll see it, and therefore it will stand out. Because, like a business, someone was telling me that QVC, their biggest sale that they have, I think in July or even June, is Christmas stuff. And you think that's crazy. Why are they selling Christmas stuff in June? But it's because certain people like to really get Christmas done and get it out the way. And businesses will be thinking about those kind of, like a Christmas or an Easter, what they need to do that way before the consumer will. So therefore, if that's in their mind and you know that, and then you send a themed offer based around that, then you're going to make more sales, because they're going, yes, this is what we're planning this week. We always do our Christmas planning in July. And therefore, seeing an offer from them about Christmas makes sense. That's where my mindset is.
Well, that's right. I think you've got to think about the different ways they buy, particularly in the first order as well, because they don't just get out the credit card. Some do, but some businesses need to get purchase orders raised. And I think it's a lot of businesses put so many barriers in the way. And actually, I'm a fan of actually just let them place their order. You know, even if we had one client that just said, let everybody just, you know, set up credit. So you didn't have to put your credit card in. You basically let them place the order. But obviously it made it very clear that there would be a credit check and they'd have to pay before the goods came. But they let them place their order. And then they had a really slick back office system that just figured out, you know, if the orders were real and get rid of the time wastes and things. But it was like, God, they got like four times the amount of orders.
I think that's key. It's what you're saying there really is get the ball in your court as soon as possible. Because as soon as it's in your... It's lead gen, isn't it? It's like, as soon as you get...
Send it out.
No, you basically go, right, I've got the ball in my court, right, I've got the lead, I've got the information right now, I can control that. Whereas if you kind of say, don't keep the ball in your court until you've gone through that hoop, and then I want you to jump there, and I want you to change your cut. You know, it's like, no, like, get the ball in your court, and then we can have systems that automate things. And sure, you're going to get some people who you won't do business with. That's fine, because you've got systems and checks to make sure that you're not going to send product out to people that aren't going to pay for it. But get as many balls in your court, because it's particularly business buyers are so busy. Like,
you know, there's a funny story, because we were doing a B2B site with one client, and we opened the store in I think it was Denmark, and we launched it. We couldn't get the payment integrated. And so we just launched it and just said, look, let's just let them place their order. It'll just be like a money stroke check order. And it really worked. Like, we launched two sites, I think, both in Denmark, one with and one without. And the one without just went woof, because it's easy.
It's easy. People want to, and they want to kind of go, they want, you know, if they've got 10 things to do that morning, they want to get the process going. And if they know, they go, well, I've put the ball in Ian's court. I know he's going to run with that now. I can go off and do something else. They're going to go and tell me what now we need to do next. They need to go and tell me. No, it's like that's what they want. They don't want to have to kind of go, I've got to work this out.
Oh, totally as well. We did something cool for a B2B client recently that automatically, there's a tick box at the top of the shopping basket, and it automatically places the order at 5 o'clock. So if you don't forget to place the order. And that was really great. You know, so you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
You know, you just decide to just go and place the order at 5 o'clock. It's really great.
Also, like, some business to business works very well, because if sometimes the businesses will have varying prices on certain things over a certain period of time based on what's happening in the market. And then you could actually give people, look, you know, would you want to be alerted when this product goes on sale? Because let's say someone's going to be buying it over the year and they don't really mind when they get it in, but they just want to buy it at a good price. Do you want to put a price watch on this? Those kind of things work really, really well. And then you can look at the data and go, oh, there's 400 people who've got a price watch on this one. So why don't we do a deal on that one? Because then we're going to get all those orders coming in. So it's about working with your clients about how they want to buy as well. And and making them real think that this is the chance to actually grab it. And also, like what you were saying a little before, was about making it easy to buy again. So a lot of the B2B sites we've done, we've actually put the past purchase link within the kind of flow of the website.
Because normally it's right in the header.
Yeah, so normally in e-commerce sites, to go and find your past purchases, you have to go to the account button, you have to log in, and you have to go and find the orders, and then you have to go and see what you also order. And that's like, you know, four or five clicks just to get there. Whereas what we found is, like, just putting it in the header, putting it in the normal pathways. It's a bit like that story we talk about, where if you want to go for a run in the morning, put your trainers in the middle of the corridor, so you trip over them. You're like, oh yeah, I was going to go for a run this morning. It's in your normal path. And so putting that past purchases right in the header, it may be in the main navigation, or maybe even near the breadcrumb, so that people can fall over that and kind of go, oh yeah, what did I buy last time? Okay, there it was. And then I go add the same to basket. And you can even do a lot of that with cookies rather than even having to log in, because you kind of go, well, I think this is that person. I'm pretty sure it is. And this is what you bought last time. But if you actually want to buy, you've got to log in later.
Hi, Dave, you know, not you. Yeah, so the whole thing is personalized. Yeah, it's so much easier. Just make it easy. It's got to be fast as well. You know, you can't have it slow. They don't, you know, some B2B, you know, customers don't want to have to go through a normal category structure. You need to make it sort of like a, almost like a quick buy.
Yeah, and also mobile was like for ages on B2B was like nothing and never used. And, you know, then it became, you know, like 2 years after that, then it became huge because the people are out on the jobs and they just want to go and reorder that part. And and being able to search a part number.
We've done something for a B2B client that, you know, particularly if people are ordering the same thing every week or every month, and it just sends them a text message. It says, hey, do you want to order the same things you did last month?
Yeah.
Yes or no? And you just reply yes, and it places the order.
Yeah. And also, cool. Like, being able to, like, say, I want to, you know, like, they're on in the field, and they want one of these, and they just take a photo of it. I say, what one, another one of these? What's this? And they go, oh, yeah, that's that. And then...
Well, there's schematic diagrams. You know, the exploded diagrams of a really complicated component with all sorts of... washers and grommets. Christ, how the hell are they going to explain that? So you do this diagram, and then we built it. So you know how you Facebook tag someone's face, like on Facebook, you just right-click and you say, you load the images into your back end, and then you just click, you know, on the exploded diagram on the image, and you put the skew in, and then it automatically then puts that on the site.
It's you know,
this is like, you can really get competitive advantage if you do stuff like this. If you do it well,
because there's so much anxiety about buying the wrong thing.
There's so much anxiety in the first place, but also there's so much loyalty if you get it right.
Yeah.
You know, they don't go. They stay.
Mm. So product calculators as well work really well. You know, instead of buying industrial paint for a big job, and they don't want to turn up to the job and get three quarters of the way through it and kind of go, oh, we needed more paint. You know, it's basically like they want to have a calculator. So this is my job. This is how big the area is. This is the kind of substrate it's going to go on to. What do? They stick that into a calculator. It spits out what they need. And they're not going to go to a competitor and do the same thing if they haven't got a calculator because they haven't got the confidence that they're going to buy the right amount of paint for it. So there's loads of things like that where you can kind of get the confidence that you've got the right solution. It's not necessarily just about price then. It's about making sure you are reliable to get the job done.
And you know what? There is such opportunity in the growth for B2B because you get these pockets of product areas where they just haven't done it yet, or people have tried to do it, they've done it badly. Mm. And, you know, you can really go in and clean up. Whereas, you know, B2C, obviously, massive opportunity. Of course, it's huge. But it's competitive and it's, you know, there's a lot of people in this space. Sometimes you get these opportunities in B2B. You think, God, no one's doing this.
Well, there's been a lot of businesses that have kind of had a traditional offline business that, you know, now, I mean, mentioned the lockdown, a lot of them are talking to me as like, look, well that business, we can't sell, our shop's shut. So now we need to, you know, we knew we should have done something about it. And yes, we should have done, because it's just like obvious that their customers would wanted to buy, and they just can't cope with people just ringing up because it's like, it's just unbearable. And I think you said you've seen a lot of movement in the industry, like where people, the kind of middlemen are disappearing and people want to buy directly from the original.
Yeah, definitely. It's been a recurring theme really for the past, I don't know, 5 years actually, but then obviously more so in the last 6 months. Where the manufacturer or the distributor in the UK is saying, look, a lot of our retailers, our resellers are disappearing. You know, the high street's closed. You know, so like we're really worried that our outlets is disappearing. So look, we need to do something about this. We're going to have some online offering. We want to be able to sell direct. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes the end reseller is saying, look, you know, we can go and buy these things. We can source off, so we can go straight to, you know, China or India or wherever it might be, and they can go and source it direct. So the whole degrees of separation used to be quite clear cut, you know, 50 years ago. The whole thing is just turning on its head. And for some B2B, you know, clients who are very much saying, oh, yeah, we will never sell direct. You know, we're only going to go through our resellers and our retailers. You know, you think, wow, how long can you still say that? I'm not saying that's wrong, but I'm saying just question yourself, is this model going to be here in 50 years' time? You know, if you're some of these clients are third, fourth generation. You know, run these companies, and then you think, hang on a minute, look, you know, wake up and look what's happening.
You know, someone is going to, you've got to eat your own lunch. You have to eat your own lunch. Because, you know, one of the things we've done many, many times is we've taken that whole, that OEM manufacturer and created a direct channel for them whilst not pissing off the wholesale channel. And that's become quite a skill because at the beginning, you want to sell direct, but you don't want to ruin your existing business. Because, but at the same time, at some point when you're doing, I mean, that's the same, one of our biggest customers, is that they basically got to the point when they were doing so much direct that they didn't care about the wholesale channel anymore because it was like, and also the wholesale channel wanted to stock their items anyway because they built their brand direct online and people were coming into those stores and asking for them because they were like, some people will always want to physically walk in and buy something. So it's kind of like it's kind of transitioning that no man's land, and we've got quite a few sneaky tricks to do that, haven't we? Basically, to get them over that point. But it's a real big opportunity, business to business, and it's only going to get bigger as people expect more from their partners in their business and their supply chain and things like that. And they'll go, oh, can you do this? Or do you have an API to your website so we can just literally connect that to our ERP system so that when we're low on stock, it just automatically buys and we'll just buy it at this price. And we'll say, we won't buy anything over this price, and it'll alert us, you know? So then supply chains become automated, don't they?
Yeah. And then you get the business, and you've got that technology. You get the business, you keep the business, and it makes it harder.
It's very difficult to switch. You know, if your API is ordering the stuff for you, and you go, well, it's just done automatically. I know that's slightly more expensive, but I don't even have to have an employee look at that. They just literally arrive on pallets at the warehouse when we've asked, when we know that they're finished. It's like a just in time system. So it's just, you know, it's where the technology is going, and that's what e-commerce can do for you.
Yeah, it's a massive, exciting space.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, we've been banging on for about 30 minutes. So I thought it was just interesting to do B2B to kind of put it alongside, you know, we've done fashion, we've done homeware, we've done hardware and those kind of things. B2B, I just wanted to have that in the portfolio of the podcasts out there because it is a big area. It's also a big opportunity for certain people who sell to consumers. And it's obviously something we've done a lot of. So if you don't have questions about it.
Yeah, what I would say is that we might do some stats around B2B, specifically for e-commerce B2B.
Yeah.
Which I've been wanting to publish for quite a long time because I've got them.
Yeah.
So they're different. You know, there are different stats for it, like the lifetime customer value when they buy online versus phoning up, for example, you know, and things like that, what you should be looking for and churn and things. So, so if anybody wants to do that, it'll give me the impetus to go and publish it.
You'll just find, if you're interested in that, just go and find Ian on LinkedIn, Ian Hammersley on LinkedIn, and just drop him a line and I'm sure you'll send it to them.
Good. I will.
And if anyone hasn't bought our book, please do go and have a look at it. It's at www.ecommercebook.co.uk. That'll get you started with all our KPIs and methodology, that book. And there's some bonuses there. So we go through a lot of split tests that we've done over the things, and that's a free bonus on the book. And that'll just get you into our ecosystem. That'll, when you buy the book, everybody buying the book comes into our Facebook group, where we post the podcasts and we post information about what's working and what's not working. And it's a real good community that started to grow. So I think there's probably about 600 people in that Facebook group at the moment. And it's growing, obviously, all the time. But if you have any questions as well, you know, either send them to Messenger or Facebook or wherever you want to, and we'll get through it. And we'll probably do another question and answer session shortly as well, because we haven't done one for about a month. So send in your questions. Awesome. Well, thank you very much, Ian. And thank you very much for listening.
Thanks, Mark. Bye.
Bye.